This is Scenic Roots. I'm Ray Bassett. Thanks for joining us. Here in the Chattanooga area, Athena Esoterics is testing during this stage of the COVID-19 pandemic. The recently created lab is run by the scientists who last year, while at the Baylor School, tracked the initial spread of the coronavirus and emerging variants in our region. I spoke with Dr. Elizabeth Forrester, one of the lab's founders and its technical director, about the Delta variant. Dr. Forrester, thanks for joining us.
Thank you for having me.
Tell us more about the Delta variant here in Hamilton County.
Well, I can tell you that the Delta variant is here in Hamilton County. It's really difficult for us to know exactly how much of the variant is present because there's not one single kind of body or entity that is doing that epidemiological study. But we do know that it's here.
And it's not the only variant that's here either.
No, it's not the only variant that's here. We know that Alpha is still present also. And then there's always just new mutations that can arise that are always going to be present in a community. And unless we are actually doing the work on a pretty regular basis in a robust way, it's difficult to know exactly what strains are circulating at this time.
And tell us more about the work that your lab is doing.
Our laboratory focuses on COVID-19 RT-PCR testing, but we also do next-generation sequencing. And the sequencing is what kind of differentiates us from just a kind of a normal COVID testing lab. So there's lots of different types of COVID tests. And at this point, most of the COVID tests are rapid tests. Most of them are rapid antigen tests, or there are some that are RT-PCR tests like we run. But many are not doing next-generation sequencing, and that's what allows us to be able to tell the difference between Alpha and Delta or just another, you know, strain or lineage of SARS-CoV-2.
What we do know is cases are ticking up. What we do know is hospitalizations are ticking up. What we do know are the vaccination rates here in the state of Tennessee and in Hamilton County.
That's true. We do know those things, which is why most people that are involved in healthcare are concerned at this point that we still have a pretty large majority of our population that have not received any vaccine at all. And what that's doing is allowing an opportunity for the virus, particularly when you have a strain like the Delta variant, where you have an increased transmission, it allows an opportunity for that virus to continue to replicate. And it also causes the problem of allowing the virus as it continues to replicate to acquire more mutations. And that's a concern for everyone just globally.
What are you and your colleagues looking at when we talk about the weeks ahead, the next few months?
We look at a couple of things. I think, you know, we are really concerned about the fall and winter. Once again, we were concerned last year and we're concerned this year. Being able to distinguish a particular respiratory pathogen is really difficult. A lot of the times people present clinically in the same way, you know, cough, congestion. And last year we were concerned that we were going to see kind of a twin pandemic of flu and COVID. And that didn't happen. It was all COVID. Flu was very, very low. And a lot of that was because of the social distancing and masking. And now we see a lot of those mandates have been lifted. People are going back to not wearing masks indoors. And so next year, the concern is, okay, what is the cold and flu season going to look like? And how difficult is it going to be to distinguish between RSV, influenza, COVID, and what is it going to look like when we kind of have all that mixed together? So we're trying to identify a way to make it easier to test for all of those things in a single test. And then also be able to strain type SARS-CoV-2 and influenza. So that's the focus in our lab right now, is getting a single test so that we can identify the patient as being COVID positive, but also be able to give the strain type information back to the clinicians at the same time, and also give that information to our local epidemiologist. The public health system is not set up like I think a lot of people think. If you want that information in terms of strain typing and epidemiology, we really have to figure out how to do that locally. That information doesn't make its way down from the CDC or even the state health department in the way that people think. And so when people are wondering what's circulating in Hamilton County, and a lot of times they look to the health department doesn't know. It's not that they're not sharing the information. A lot of times they don't know in real time. So we would like to figure out a way to work with our public health officials locally to help them get the information that they need for our community.
And then you have the same challenge as so many entities have in this, and that is the difference between urban and rural and different rules in different places.
I think that's been the biggest challenge probably globally. We are all facing the same problem, but we don't have a cohesive way that we are attacking that problem. And so county by county, we have different recommendations. State by state, we have different recommendations. And then country by country, we have different recommendations. And so that's why we've kind of seen these trends where COVID cases will decline. But if you look, we always kind of keep our eye on what's happening in other countries, because what's happening in other countries will ultimately be what we are facing here. One of the things in the United States that's been a little frustrating is that we don't have a vaccine shortage. A lot of these countries, you know, when you looked at India, for example, when they had their massive surge a few months ago, they did not have access to vaccines. We have access to vaccines here. And so we have the number one tool for helping to fight and end this pandemic. We still need to be vigilant and, you know, wear masks until we're kind of over this. But if everyone would just kind of get together, you know, locally and say, this is how we're going to attack this, it would be helpful.
And how are you staffing up to meet where the variants seem to be now and where things might go in the coming weeks?
Right now, we are well staffed to deal with the testing volume that we have. Our testing is pretty high throughput, meaning it doesn't require a lot of staff to do quite a bit of testing. And in the past few months, the testing numbers have been relatively low. We do expect them to come up. But then again, we do have people that are vaccinated, and that's really has helped. And so I don't expect there to be quite the surge that we saw, for example, in December and early January. But again, it's really hard to predict.
And if people have questions or want more information about what the lab is doing and how it's doing it, where can they go online?
We have a website, and it's www.athenaesoterix.com. And there's lots of information there. And we're always welcome to email or call us with any questions.
All right. Dr. Forrester, thanks so much.
Thanks for having me.
10 years ago this month, Poetry in the Brew began in Nashville. The open mic poetry readings met in the loft of the Portland Brew East until the pandemic hit, and then the readings moved online. Next month, the in-person readings will resume in the loft, and an anthology will be released, Sinew, 10 Years of Poetry in the Brew, 2011 to 2021. Poetry in the Brew host Christine Hall is one of the editors of the anthology, which features a few Chattanooga poets. Christine, thanks for joining us.
Thank you.
For people who may be hearing of Sinew for the first time, tell us more about it.
Poetry in the Brew is an open mic. We're based in Nashville, Tennessee, though we have been online since last March. We'll be going back in person in August, celebrating our 10th anniversary this month. So to celebrate that, we have gathered poems on the subject of the body from perspectives all over the world. Before we went online, we would have poets visit us from the UK or maybe Canada or New York. But since we went online, we've really been able to welcome an international group. And so we have voices from everywhere, including two poets from Chattanooga included, Ray Zimmerman and Christian Collier. They're fantastic poetic figures and community organizers and great voices.
Tell us more about the setting for Sinew.
Well, we wanted to explore the theme of the body, the trials and tribulations and triumphs that we all share, and also Sinew, the idea of the connectedness that we all experience when we share our art, when we open ourselves up and we're vulnerable and we are able to give other people permission to do that as well, show their insides, be real, talk about some of the things we keep in shadow, which aren't so dark when we bring them to light.
It's easier to do that when you have people sharing their thoughts, their feelings, their ideas in a poetic performance space versus online. But tell us more about the space of where people have shared them over the years.
Back in 2011, the original organizers of Poetry in the Brew were missing having a place to meet in person. It was a brief period in Nashville's history where we didn't have a regular open mic, and so they found Portland Brew East, and there's a space in the loft there where we all gathered. I started attending in about 2013 and then became host and organizer in 2014. It's a beautiful little loft space with beautiful artwork, so the inspiration is flowing. You go there and you can feel the muse. And, you know, we have experienced voices who share and first timers. We love when they come back. And yeah, it's a lovely thing to experience in person, to share with an audience, the eye contact. And, you know, you can feel the energy in the room. However, going online has offered a lot of value to us as well, expanding the people we can connect with, making it more accessible, for instance, for people who aren't able to make it up the stairs to the loft at Portland Brew East. So even when we do come back in person August 11th, we will maintain a monthly online reading.
What drew you to poetry?
It feels like a native language to me. I was always absorbed in the language of poetry when I was in school, and when I became a bit of a rebellious punk teenager, I was on the streets in San Francisco for a while. It became one of the only ways I found that I could truly express myself. When you're speaking extemporaneously, you might cull a bit of what you say for a certain audience. But then when it's a sanctioned art form, you can truly pour it out. So it's perhaps less threatening that way. And
You also don't have to worry about the FCC. I do.
I love the idea.
And UTC, I do.
Right. Well, these are considerations and we tailor for each of the formats. The thing is, though, you know, when you are channeling pure direct art through whichever medium you choose, you are able to actually put it out there as it flows through you, not necessarily editing. That may come afterwards. I just feel it's very important to have an outlet for whatever is a genuine experience within, and bringing that out, it provides for that connection.
There is something, speaking in the artistic sense, there is something about letting it out in order to not only get it out there, but also, depending on the theme that you are trying to express, it's also necessary to let it out in that way in order to let it go.
I agree, yes. And also to feel that arc throughout history and throughout space to all the other people who may have had a similar experience. You're letting go of it, but somebody else might just be picking it up. And knowing that you're not alone, being able to recognize an emotion that's put into a work or an experience that someone has articulated or, you know, even rendered in a painting or whatever outlet it is they choose. If they've done it honestly, true to the experience, that resonates. And that's a gift. It gives permission and it gives validation.
So then how, given all the years of performances, how do you decide on this collection? How do you arrive at this collection?
We've had thousands of poets come through the brew over the years, and we've hosted special events as well. I am amazed by some of the voices who have taken the time to grace our stage. When we set about to publish this anthology, we wanted to focus, first of all, the subject matter, the theme being connected through the body. And then also we made it by invitation only, an invitation to submit, and sent out those invitations to our regulars, to people who have been features, and to people who participated in some of our special events, such as last summer we hosted an event in collaboration with Poetry in the Borough, Murfreesboro, called Black Voices Matter. So drawing from some of these different ways that we've met poets, we bring them together through the theme of the body, and then we looked at what they submitted and what sung together, hearing that, you know, harmonious balance in it. And we're able to pick pieces that I feel tell a story. They are moving and they feel holistic.
And how much of this focus on the body was driven by the events of this past year plus? And how much did that drive the submissions?
Yes, I would say that did bring the theme of the body to our forefront. Enduring that pandemic, a lot of us being locked down all by ourselves, having much to examine within and on the surface, I noticed that there were many pandemic-related experiences emerging through these words, but also more timeless sentiments, though, of course, pandemics have come and gone throughout human history. There are so many points at which we share and meet through the body, and there are so many poetic ways to express that. We've divided the book into two sections, spirit and flesh, and throughout there are pieces that confront racism, classism, sexism, ableism, many topics that are on our minds right now that we need to confront. And then also looking at both the physical and soulful and spiritual aspects of this, bringing them all together, there's these threads that run true throughout.
How did seeing all of those submissions maybe encourage you to look at poetry differently, to look at the body differently?
There are poets who articulate experiences that I will never have in my skin, with my background, or just in my day-to-day life. It's not something I'm going to necessarily see, and yet with the gift of their words, they've allowed me that glimpse, that nuance. Every time someone has faithfully portrayed what their perspective is, what their viewpoint is, it gives me an insight. I am able to expand in compassion and understanding. And also, people have just been so brave in confronting challenging topics to put into word. Even giving birth, for instance, certainly we talk about that. Each of us have experienced it on one side or the other, or both, perhaps. And yet there is a poem, for instance, in this book that speaks about it in a way that I have never actually heard. It is quite graphic and grotesque, and yet also uplifting and freeing, just to be able to put into language these experiences that, while we all share them, maybe we don't talk so plainly, or we tend to idealize or polish over them, and to really draw us into the nitty-gritty of that, to make us look at it. It's a form of salvation.
What is next?
What is next? Well, we come back in person August 11th, and then August 24th, we'll have an online release party. August 28th, we'll have an in-person release party at Portland Brew East. We are now just beginning a new series collaboratively of poetry pop-ups. So live and in person in public open-air spaces, and we have a group online where we are inviting people to participate in that. It'll be a bit of a flash mob situation where we all gather and speak into the air and then disappear. So that's starting up August 1st, actually, will be our first one. And we have many, many different collaborations and special events in the works. We release news every week on our blog.
And if people want more information, where can they go online?
Yes, our blog is poetryinthebrew.wordpress.com. We're also on Instagram and Facebook at poetryinthebrew. And yeah, always please try and check us out for one of the readings if you just want to listen, or if you want to share your voice. We're always so welcoming and excited to hear new voices, and for our returning friends as well.
All right. Christine, thanks so much.
Oh, thank you. It's a pleasure speaking with you.
You're listening to Scenic Roots on WUTC.
This is Scenic Roots. It's truly a pleasure to tell you that this afternoon we have a session recorded in Barking Legs Theatre on Dodds Avenue before a real live breathing audience. The theatre, as you may have noticed, has been very quiet during the pandemic, with the exception of a handful of shows in the garden and a few virtual concerts filmed in the theatre without an audience. This is the first time in quite some time that they have staged an honest-to-goodness show in front of an audience the players can see, featuring Sean Perkinson playing the guitar, John Steele's nimble bass, and Yaddy Westfield's propulsive drumming.
Thank you. Oh! We'll be right back. Thank you very much. First couple of numbers we did was a Herbie Hancock tune entitled Watermelon Man, as performed by the Headhunters, and a tune by the Meters called Sissy Strut. And we're going to keep things moving. This is a Chick Corea tune entitled Humpty Dumpty.
Thank you.
Rehearsal.
Thank you.
Sean Perkinson, John Steele, and Yadi Westfield playing for an audience they could see in front of them in Barking Legs Theatre on Dodds Avenue on Saturday, July 10th. We will have more from this show next Tuesday afternoon. Coming up next month at Barking Legs, the Keith Brown Trio. Keith Brown is the son of Donald Brown, an amazing pianist himself. That'll be on Thursday, August 12th, and we'll be indoors like the show we've been listening to. Call Me Spinster are scheduled for a show in the garden at Barking Legs on Sunday, August 15th. This is Scenic Roots on listener-supported public radio in Chattanooga.
For the rest of this part of the session at Barking Legs Theater, visit our website, wutc.org. You're listening to Scenic Roots on WUTC. I'm Ray Bassett. Thanks for listening to Scenic Roots. We come to you from WUTC at the University of Tennessee at Chattanooga. Email us at scenicroots423@gmail.com. Follow us on Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter at scenicroots423. Listen to us online anytime at WUTC.org and the WUTC app. For Richard Winham and the rest of our team, join us again next time for Scenic Roots.